I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this from your program today. This looks like really fascinating and really relevant work for us in brain health. I think you'll get an impression as we go through. So I'm sorry I can't be there in person, but I will try and give you an overview of some of the work that we've been doing. I'll be presenting, since I can't be there in person to wave my arms and attract attention, I'll be trying to keep you following with a rather large number of overheads. I won't be going through all of them, so some of them will be background material, which you can look at or flip backwards and forwards through as you go through. I will be giving some instructions to jump ahead or just to peruse some of the overheads real fast, so I don't need to get worried about the number of them at present. So let's get started. The overview of what I've done is really to give the context of the work that we are going in our collaborative research center on spatial cognition. And I will briefly indicate my position in that, because as you heard at the beginning, my department is officially applied linguistics, so you might wonder what is applied linguistics doing in space, so you will hear about that really quickly. Then we'll go on to representations of space, which is something which we have been specializing on for a considerable time here in the research center for the past 6 years, 7 years. And I'll give you some of the results and conclusions that we've come to during that work and how this leads into certain suggestions that we currently have now for ontology practice and some targets and challenges that we are heading for in our next round of research. And as you'll see, this will only be possible if it's done in a collaborative way. So this research center is funded by the German Research Council, the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft, and that's why it's called an SFB, but it's a particular kind of collaborative research center. And the areas which we focus are on spatial reasoning, representation, action, communication. And it is scheduled for three phases, and we're coming to the end of the second phase, so we started in 2003, and we're putting together our proposals for the next phase now. The main areas which we address, you see here on slide 4, are things to do with spatial assistance. So anything where space is being activated, being used, or activities are unfolding in space, and we need to bring systems and people together. So we're looking at things like mobility support, tasks which are embedded in space, everyday activities, also descriptions of spatial situations, verbal and visual, and exploration in space, navigation, and also dialogic interaction about all of these things. A couple of little examples to show where we are coming from and where we're going to. This is an autonomous wheelchair that was developed here in Bremen called Roland. And you see here it's sitting in a corridor, and it's helping the user of this wheelchair get around. And while it's doing this, it's putting together a lot of very different kinds of information. So, for example, the person here is speaking to it, saying that in front to the right is the seminar room. It's also taking in quantitative information, so measuring how far it is away from the wall. And it's also doing some symbolic processing, like it might have recognized that there's a door there. Another environment that we're working on is this assisted living lab, which is called BAL, where we are extending away from the activities just moving around in corridors to really everyday normal activities like cooking or moving around. And all of these are, of course, spatially embedded activities. And if we have systems which are supporting users in these spatial situations, then they have to be able to understand those spatial situations. So that's how we get into the area of spatial semantics. Moving a little bit away from the small scale, sort of out of the corridor and out of the room to like entire floor plans, this begins to indicate some of the problems that we're looking at. For example, here on slide 7, you see that there's a graph put together by laser scanning a floor and working out the free space in a Voronoi diagram and using this navigation. But this is fine for the robot. And then the question is, okay, now if we put the people back in, how can we support communication and sharing tasks between the robot and what the robot knows, because these are very different things. So here, somebody might say, where are you? And collect information from somebody else on this floor plan. And we can imagine there being a whole bunch of very unuseful responses in many situations. So on slide 9, we see some unhelpful situations, like 25.4 meters northwest of you. Oh, great. Corridor. Then maybe that doesn't help. Or you might have some GPS coordinates or something else. If you look at what might be helpful for a particular user in a particular situation, then we might have something which is more natural, like leave the room and turn right into the corridor, or go to the window and turn left. Now, all of these raise considerable problems of semantic interpretation, and that's where we come in here, saying, like, how can we really span the different kinds of spatial information which we find in the laser scans and the other scanning devices of the robot up to how people are conceptualizing space and building bridges between these. So this gives us the main areas that give us our scientific research tasks. We also work on things getting out of the building altogether, to things like context-specific wayfinding assistance, where we have notions you see on the up here. You can see the mouse moving up here. Then we have a map coming directly from data, and then it being simplified in particular ways so that it's more communicable. So from these processes of schematization, which then can give navigation either in visual or language forms. So we're looking at these transformations of information in ways to make it more usable for particular tasks. So the sources of relevant knowledge there, we see are considerable. If we put all these things together, we have location-based services, geographic information systems, common sense objects and activities, and we need to be aware of the space that all these things are unfolding in. We also have natural language dialogue and robot perception and a few other things which didn't fit so neatly on the slide. So all of these are providing information which is relevant spatially, and our main goal then is to bring these together and see how we can make them communicate. It's an interoperability in there. So this basic problem is rather challenging in that each of these areas are, well, they're diverse areas with different areas of expertise, with different communities and different interests and different representations, and the kinds of knowledge maintained by such systems are very different. And so we have one of the central challenges to interoperability. How do we bring these things together? Because things are developed in different contexts by different groups, then one finds these kinds of consequences falling out, and this happens both in standardization and also in scientific practice, that we find components being developed again and again and again. So there's a lot of failure or missing chances for reuse of information. And each community of practice defines many of these things slightly differently. Or maybe they don't. It's difficult to tell sometimes, since it may be a similar definition in different words. And, of course, each standardization group has little time to look at parallel activities because it has to reflect the demands of its own community. And so this, again, is another contributing factor to a lack of shared development. This is me, so you've got a face, and you can see why this then relates to work which I've been doing, even though I started in applied linguistics, or particularly computational linguistics. In computational linguistics, the work I was engaged with in the 80s was natural language generation, where we very soon had the problem of relating our language technology to different domains of application. And so there again, we had an interoperability problem, and very quickly we came to the idea that ontologies were the way forward. So there you see, coming out of the work on computational linguistics, then there's been a focus, which continues up to the current time, on formal ontology and general design principles for ontology, and particularly relations between differently motivated ontologists. Because if we were working with language technology and we needed then to provide technology for a completely different application, then the information in these systems would have completely different purposes. And so relating between them, bringing them together, was a challenge. So we have relations between differently motivated ontologies. And that goes directly into the current work on spatial representation. So the solution that we are pursuing within our research center is to rely on results which are coming out of ontological engineering. And particularly, we want to combine, using ontological methods, these diverse domains of knowledge, like the knowledge of the human world, knowledge of the robot world, geo-knowledge, spatial knowledge, knowledge of language, and use ontology to bring these together. So the goal is very straightforward, and it's one which many of us now share, the idea if you achieve interaction between system modules using ontologies. So there's a really, I think now well-established idea that ontologies are a good candidate for providing such interoperability. So we have a couple of ontologies, and we build some kind of mapping between them. And these ontologies may be quite different types. Spatial representations, linguistic representations, or general ontology and spatial, and perhaps different views of navigation graphs, and the essential mechanism stays the same. The problem, of course, is how do we fill in that kind of arrow in the middle? And that's really the main focus of our work and what I'll be presenting the rest of the talk. Giving some of the directions which we think need to be considered there. So if we have this starting point that we're working on ontologies, we've decided we want to use ontologies to relate different kinds of ontologies together, different kinds of information, where do we start? There are many different ontologies, just like there are many different domains of concern and many different communities. So how can we decide which directions of ontologies will we build upon and which will we bring together? This is quite a fundamental issue because ontologies themselves are developed according to different methodologies. They have different motivations, different domains of application, different worlds, different communities. And so bringing these together is not a straightforward task. And I'll come back to this again with more force a little bit later. Having something which is represented as an ontology is by no means sufficient for having achieved interoperability. So there is still, I think, sometimes the hope, well, if we put it in an ontology, then we're halfway there, or we're maybe 90% there to having interoperability. I don't think this is at all necessarily the case. So we need a few more constraints on the process. So how are we going about this? We've been combining and looking at sources of information from particular directions. The ones we're focusing on are views of ontology and space, so how has space been treated in ontology. We also are looking very much at qualitative spatial representation and reasoning, and I'll give a few examples of that later. We also look at language and the use of language concerning space, and we also look at geographic information sciences. Now, I'm assuming that the GIS side is something which most people in this context are very well familiar with, so I won't be saying anything much about that. I'll be focusing on the other three areas, giving some examples, but then the GIS one should be seen as running alongside of that as well. So these representations of space, if we put them out on slide 24, we see that we have contributions from ontology, as I said, qualitative spatial reasoning and representation, linguistics, and I put off on one side one which we will not be drawing on very much, and that's geometry, just physical, mathematical views of space. Now, these, of course, are very important, very useful. We can do a lot of calculations with them. However, in terms of getting people into the loop, then this is not the way which people most often deal and conceptualize with space. So we see that as providing a necessary component, but a very small one when compared to the contributions from the other sides. So I'll give some indications of that now as we go through. So in the next few slides, I'm just going to briefly give an overview of the range of activities which we can see in space from ontology and from qualitative spatial reasoning and language. Not to go into details, but just to give a sense of the range of different kinds of decisions, which are sometimes similar and sometimes different, which are being made there. And this range of different alternatives is what then motivates our main conclusions and the way which we now approach space and are continuing to approach space. we can see when we start off on slide 24 that even in the basic primitives which are adopted for representing space, there are some overlaps and some differences. Some people take regions and parts and congruence. Others focus on connections. Others focus on boundaries. And all of these lead to different conceptualizations, different views of how space is working. Now, all of the examples I'm going to give in the next flick over in the next 10 slides or so, 15 slides, are taken from a piece of work that we did a few years ago, myself and Scott Farr, on where we were looking at the state of the art in spatial ontology, which is available from the Collaborative Research Center. We are now working on an update to this, so there will be a new one coming, but many of the things here are taken from that. So ontology, spatial representations. If we look around at different ontologies, then we see that they contain already a lot of information about space, a lot of views of what needs to go into a representation of space. For example, here's one from the suggested merged ontology, SUMA, and we can see going down here in this hierarchy that there are some regions, and we have things like transit waves, astronomical bodies, geographic regions, holes. We also have things like connected objects, transit way again, substance, food. Some of these sound spatial and some of them don't sound spatial, so there's certainly different kinds of information going together, which is a general concern with ontologies. How do we guarantee the quality of our ontologies? There's a lot of information there. Sometimes it may need a little clearing up. We can go on. SUMA also has shape and position, various different kinds of position relational attributes. Why these and not others, one could ask. But there's information there. We also see, I'll just go through those jumping over, similarly for the well-known site ontology, if we go on to slide 30, then also there's a lot of information there about spatial kind of information, spatial entities of various kinds. So in the partially tangible list, there are very, very many which we can see here. So all of these are to do with space. They are representations which are used in different processes. And we can go through the three or four slides on site, saying that there are spatial regions here, on 31 and on 32, with different kinds of surfaces, and on slide 33, different kinds of paths. All I want you to take away from these is just the awareness that there are a lot of quite detailed descriptions in these ontologies, often formalized to a greater or lesser extent, but there's information there. Another kind of information one finds is navigational information. Here's one which we also use a lot, route graphs. And finally, a collection on slide 34, we have the Dolce ontology, foundational ontology, developed at the Laboratory of Applied Ontology in Trento, where also there's information about space, but many other things as well. I'll come back to these to do with space a little bit later. Here I would just focus on the different kinds of information in these ontologies. This is a foundational one, Dolce. So we have information about physical objects like rooms and offices, and also about activities and various kinds of agents and beliefs. And in this slide on 39, we can see this foundational ontology provides a very, very densely axiomatized view of just what an object is. It provides a lot of information, detailed information, at a very abstract level. So this doesn't tell us about particular objects, but it tells us what all objects, all physical objects, are going to have to have in common and the relationships between these. For example, we may have some amount of matter, some stuff, like some wood, and this may be shaped into some kind of artifact like a table, and it may have particular features like a corner, and it may have some physical qualities like being heavy. It's important to get the connections between these ontologically solid so that good inferences follow from them and you can rely upon the inferences. But that's the foundational work that a foundational ontology needs to do. Let's go to and look, put that on one side for the moment. So there's a lot of ontologies saying some quite detailed things about space. Let's look at the qualitative spatial reasoning and representation. And here again, we find a whole range of alternatives. One which is probably known to most people is the region connection calculus. This is the one with 8 relations. These have already been put into some database systems and are used quite frequently. But it's very important to realize that the region connection calculus, RCC8, is just one of a very, very large family of descriptions. So here we can immediately relate it to some very close family members. So we've got the region connection calculus with five base relations along the bottom. And this also relates very closely to alternative constructions of space by Max Einhofer and colleagues, which are also in this area. However, as we see, this provides a good basis for doing a very different kind of reasoning. This is reasoning by composition. I don't know if everyone is familiar with how reasoning in RCC 8 and 5 works, but normally it works in terms of composition tables where you combine different relations. So, for example, we can take that this partially overlapping here, and if we have it combined with another partially overlapping, then okay, doesn't tell too much. Or if we go on to any of the others, we get an entire disjunction or collection of relations. Details here are also not important. What's important is that by using this form of reasoning, one has an alternative way to coming to spatial conclusions apart from going to the geometry and running through the calculations. And this is something which is more closely related to how people are often reasoning about these things, it seems. So we have reasoning by composition tables, but not only about regions and RCC. We also have calculi for directions. Here's one for the double cross calculus, which tells us about things like left and right, or on one side, or behind us. And we can put these together by composition as well and do similar reasoning. So if we go from A to B and then from B to D, then we can work out where in relation to D this C is over here, this church, by doing a composition of the relations again. So all of these qualitative calculi work by this process of composition, although they have very different composition tables and different properties. Now, here there are a lot of these different kinds of calculi there. Here's one, again, for orientation, star calculus of different granularities. So one can see this as a generalization of the cardinal points. We also have one here, which is, again, for more orientation, the dipole calculus, where you're relating directed lines in relation to each other, directed arrows. And all these different relations give us ways of describing space, which are useful for some purposes and then not so useful for other purposes. This is a generalization of bringing together something like the double cross and then likely the dipole. So we have combinations of these things, and then we have here finally one for movement, which is the qualitative trajectory calculus, where you can describe relative motions and do again reasoning using something like composition tables in order to work out qualitatively what relationships are in moving situations. So a whole bunch of information there of very different kinds. Finally, language. Language also adds in its complications. So these are very old examples from Herskovitz. What does on mean? Is this book on the table? Well, it probably depends upon the purpose of why you're saying where the book is at all. To say that it's geometrically not on the table is not quite enough because it's not touching the table, but in some cases one would want to say it's on the table. So the meaning of on is by no means so straightforward. Again, similar example, the bulb is in the socket. Well, is it? Some of it is, but we would still tend to say the bulb is in the socket. So all of these examples, this one and this one, is the cat in the table, are used to show that a geometric representation isn't quite enough when we are providing a semantics for the natural language usage of these terms. Is the potato in the bowl, even though it's geometrically enclosed? Then no, clearly it isn't. So relating calculi and language is also something which is quite difficult. Here's an approach from Eigenhofer, where you can relate different portions in a neighborhood network of relations to various linguistic expressions. But this is ongoing work, and it's quite a complex affair to relate them together. So spatial language in conclusion is extremely flexible and it's sensitive to function and purpose. So whether something is above your head, if it's an umbrella, depends on whether it keeps the rain out, not whether it's geometrically above your head. And so one needs to bring this into the entire equation. If one wants to interact with people about space, then one has to know that how people use spatial language is a very, very flexible thing. So we'll move to start drawing some conclusions from this very speedy run-through and overview. We've got many types of spatial information. We have qualitative calculi. We've got different ways of finding space. And they all have different reasoning methods, different coverage, different strengths, and different weaknesses. So the question of how these could get brought together with some kind of alignment is quite substantial. This is a difficult problem. The conclusion that we drew from this, and which we are now building on, it's in slide 60, is we think that there's no sense in which a simple merging of all or any of the above is a sensible strategy to follow. So as an example, if we take lake and we can look at it in different ways, is it a link in a transit system because there's a ferry on it, or is it a recreational area or obstacle? If we took the ontologies of transit systems and geographical regions and sources of water and recreational areas and we merge these together, we don't have a sensible ontology. We have a complete mess. We have chaos. So what we need to do is to consider how we can maintain the requirements of the individual components, the individual areas of knowledge, which may each have their own ontological commitments for good reasons. So we essentially adopt the idea that there are many perspectives on reality and we need many ontologies. So we do not have the ontology, we have many ontologies with links between them. Even more than this, in any of these ontologies may be broken down into very smaller sub-ontologies, which may also have complicated relations between them. So this is our current view of how we are trying to model the entire ontological process, breaking the views of the world down according to different perspectives on objects, activities, artifacts, language. And the last point here on spatial theories, we're really going for plug-and-play spatial theories. Rather than, well, we can't have them all, we'll only take one or two, what we really want to say is that all of the spatial theories that we find, they have their strengths and weaknesses, and we should be able to adopt the ones which are appropriate for particular purposes. So the essential ingredients that we're working on for these, drawing on for these plug-and-play spatial ontologies are to use existing ontologies, existing formal tools, and we're extending these for the specific problem of combining information flexibly. And we also then want to be able to combine distinct reasoning possibilities so that we don't lose anything, so that we can get the most out of what each of these are offering. It's now known that if we put together some of these spatial calculi without much attention, then the results are computationally have very poor computational properties with very high computational complexity. So we want to avoid that under all circumstances. So the ontologies that we draw on currently are Dolce, and I'll say why in a moment. We also take some information from Barry Smith's basic formal ontology, and we also have a separate view of ontology for language. Now I'm going to describe, sorry, I jumped ahead, 68. I'm going to describe how Dolce helps us put space together and then go on to finish with what we are doing with that currently. So Dolce takes a very particular view of space, which relates it to qualities. So if we take something like colors, which are qualities, then Dolce has a very nice treatment of them. It says that we can have different theories of different qualities, and it doesn't really constrain us very much more than that. So if we take a model of color, for example, this color wheel on 71, or this different view of space on 72, we could take any of these and plug them into the quality box, so we could have plug-and-play qualities. Now, Dolce, as we see here, more technically, treats this relationship between objects and their qualities in a quite technical fashion, but it allows what comes into this box over here on the right-hand side, the color region, the physical regions, to be replaced by different theories. And this is exactly now what we do with space, because they also suggest that space is a quality. So we can do exactly the same thing. Here's a physical object, it has a spatial location, and the spatial location is defined by a particular theory of space. But they don't need to specify which theory of space. So we can replace the color region by a space region, and that's exactly what we are following through. We have a physical object, and this has a particular quality of spatial location. And what goes in this box on the right-hand side is any of these formal calculi that we have described before. So any of the very many RCCs and all of the others there too. So these give us ways of plug-and-play spatial semantics. And we think this is an important step to take because it means that we don't have to commit to one particular spatial representation, which we then find out for particular purposes, it would have been better to make another choice. So this is a very open approach to how we get space into the entire account. So this should be possible to formalize the formalization, the spatial representation that we have depending upon the task at hand. So how do we do this? We do this using two particular computational tools. We're using the Common Algebraic Specification language, which is closely or similar for some of you who might know Common Logic. It's something which is a little similar. And we also have a rather extensive tool set which has been developed in Bremen for using these representations for with a whole bunch of different reasoners. Now, for the next couple of slides, and also you can go back and look at these at length or at leisure, so I'm not going to go through in detail here. I'm just going to show you that some of the work we've been doing is using this for constructing modular ontologies, for example, with Dolce. This parcel representation, this common algebraic specification language, gives us a way of building very structured ontologies, and this is the red thing down here, very structured ontologies. And this is what we find missing in the current standards which are available, for example, with OWL and the semantic web. So one of our concerns is to bring these together, to add the very extensive structuring mechanisms that we have in a language like Castle to the possibilities for defining ontologies in OWL. This gives an idea that we're not limited to any particular logic. There are many different logics which we can be put in, which is called the heterogeneous toolset. So we use a whole variety of different logics, including description logics. And we are now extending these representations so that we can relate to OWL-DL for standard ontologies. We can combine the structuring principles with description logics, and we're also formalizing the entire family of spatial calculi in the terms which Castle provides. So if you can look through here afterwards in this slide 8 to 90, where the specifications really just allow us to look at the boxes on the left-hand side as to take an ontology, how is it defined in regard to logical language, and break it down into basic modules. So here we have primitives and parthood, and then we add in muriology, theory of parts, and then we add in some more information, seeing that develop on the left-hand side. And in the end, you can just plug it all together. And this is work which is continuing. Doing this, we've been able to prove some results concerning consistency, which would not have been possible if the ontology had been seen as one big monolithic block using various tools which you could refer to there. So the reasoning which we do here is with first-order reasoning, but also using description logic reasoning and also spatial reasoning, using specialized spatial reasoners, two here developed in our collaborative research center. Here's an example of Spark. Spark allows us to take, this is one developed in Bremen, to take several spatial calculi and do reasoning with them. And this is the current state of the work, I think, from a little while ago, saying that it covers these calculi over here. You can do various things with it. And this reasoning then runs qualitatively. And so we make use of this independently and in addition to the normal kind of reasoning which you have with a description logic or in terms of other more general reasoning. So the lessons drawn. The idea, of course, is familiar to everybody. Having ontologies is considered to be very nice because you can reuse information. You can take ontologies out of the box and put it into your applications. But because many different ontologies are developed in different communities, then although many people are constructing ontologies, they still tend to be unrelated, they are application-specific, and they don't draw upon previous results sufficiently. And so we have a lack of interoperability, even though it's being done with ontologies. So ontologies by themselves are not enough. So ontologies can lead to interoperability problems, as any other specification can. This we also see in various approaches to meta-modeling in ontologies, because these are often currently looking at translatability across the formal languages and not the content. And we see this as something which is still a problem to be addressed, because if we only look at the syntactic, the formal side of the language, then we are not addressing the fact that the constructions, the theories expressed could be very, very different and could also be suffer from interoperability problems. So we're trying to extend this with a semantic view of relating the different models. To do this, then we have to be down on the right-hand side of the general map of different kinds of ontologies. We have to have axiomatized theories. If we just have catalogs or glossaries, then there's not enough information to get hold of. We can't define semantic relationships. So we need the theories and need the ontologies to be axiomatized. So if those definitions are too loose or too sparse, this doesn't allow us to specify semantic connections. And this means that we are orienting ourselves more towards heavy ontologies, in contrast to light ontologies, because that provides the appropriate amount of axiomatization to define the semantics that we have. But we're also committed to heterogeneity. That means that if we can specify something without going to a full first-order logic, then we do so. It leaves us open to pick the logic to fit the task. So the lessons drawn from our work here are ontological best design principles. We think the ontologies need to be axiomatized. We need axiomatized ontologies. We need to enforce modularity structurally in our specifications. We need to allow heterogeneity, so we have different kinds of specifications, different kinds of logics even involved, fitting the logic to the task rather than the other way around. And we need to allow multiple perspectives, which do necessarily have one single consistent view on the world. There may be different views on the world which get combined. So we need to put this together into our ontology construction, the way we now construct our ontologies. So we believe that only with working with these kind of constructions can we really deal with the interoperability program, especially in something like space, which has such a wide number of useful but differing construals. So where next? Where we are going and want to go now is to come more into the area of geospatial information. This is where we have this strong connection with your concerns. This seems to be an area which appears to us to be like the next major area of ontological development. If we look to the establishment of ontologies in other domains, for example in the medical domain, it's now extremely well established that ontologies are playing an important role. And I think we're going to see a similar explosion in the geospatial area. However, because space is such a complicated and interesting thing from many different perspectives, we'll need to be doing more than just converting existing schema to R. We'll need to be respecting this multi-perspective rivalism and also making sure that we can relate different views of the world using some of the techniques, I think, that we have been working on here. So this is a question of clarity. Doing vertical slices through and hoping it will be consistent, from our work on the very different views of space from different spatial calculi, then we would wonder, and there would certainly be places where consistency would be a more difficult issue, which may not naturally follow. We also see in things like the industry foundation classes for buildings a very similar direction, which sort of gives us sort of heart here. If we start from a geometric model on the left-hand side, adding more and more information. It's becoming more modular, breaking down into different areas, different domains of concern. This is exactly the way that we have also been forced to go by our consideration of space. So we want to certainly bring those two worlds together much more, which is why, and our next phase of work, we'll be focusing on these areas. We'll be focusing on assisted ambient living to get these spatial activities, but also on geographic information science and working more with the geographic data and considering this from an ontological perspective, and also on building design. And I think this relates very naturally to a lot of ongoing standardization initiatives, particularly on the ontology area. So we are very interested in following and joining in this direction development. Geographic information systems, I think, are just a wonderful opportunity and a place for applying some of the techniques which we've been thinking of as well, because naturally one has breaking down into different kinds of information. So, going on then. So finally, following up this direction, we are looking at this from the ontological side, but we can only really do this if this is taken further with the expert detailed knowledge from the domains and the communities which are at home in the areas that we're looking at. So we're certainly interested in any cooperations which are allow us to bring these two worlds or these several worlds together using ontological engineering as an overall framework. So I should acknowledge here that this isn't my work. This is the entire Collaborative Research Center team, which stands behind us here. And more information about all of the aspects I've talked about here is available from our website. And I'll finish with an advertisement. We have a training program for PhD researchers in semantic integration of geospatial information together with the University of Munster and the University of Buffalo. And we're looking for some good candidates right now. So if any of the things which I've talked about sound interesting to anyone, or you know anyone who you would recommend for this, then please do so, although we'd like to hear from them. But otherwise, I'll go back to this main message here, which is that we see that cooperation in these areas is the way forward. So thank you very much for your attention.
John, thank you very much. This is John Moeller again. I was wondering how you were going to get through 109 slides in 45 minutes, and you did it. Fascinating presentation. I'm sure there's a lot of questions or dialogues that we could have, so maybe we could just take a couple of minutes, either on the phone or here in the room, and also encourage people to continue the dialogue online. And then I think one of the things that we'd like to do as a follow-up is, and we'll work with Gary and Leo and others to have a continuing dialogue on these topics.